Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Ty Sharmanethrin, a Wheel of Time podcast. I, as always, am Will.
I'm Sam.
And we're finishing up the Shadow Rising.
Shadow Rising, finishing the last four or five chapters, however many.
Yes.
53 to 58, I think.
So let's hop on in there.
The price of a departure. So we're back to Perrin. We find out there have been more attacks in Emmons Field. And Perrin is kind of strategizing the defense with Fael, Tam, and other villagers. Aram is just kind of a shadow. He's just following him everywhere. And so there's a man that is demanding to see Perrin, and he's dying. He delivers the message, "We are coming," before he dies. Like, real useful. That's not a lot of information, but he was dying anyway. Another boy comes running, says, "There's someone coming out of the Westwood," but luckily this is not an attack. This is Loyal and Gaul.
Right.
They've been off to seal the Waygate. Gaul is wounded, and Loyal has carried him as they ran away from Trollocs. Loyal delivers some less than great news. There are thousands of Trollocs in the woods. And Luke rides up and says, "No, it's not that many. There's just a few of them out there." So Gaul is saying, "Well, knows what he's talking about." And Luke's like, "Right. I've been to the Blight. I know what I'm talking about." So they're just having this back and forth. Perrin goes back to the inn, goes back to sleep, to the wolf dream. Then we get ourselves a little montage of scenes, kind of like Egwene's. It's kind of confusing because, you know, Egwene's supposed to be the dreamer. And this is like where we get back to like the merging of Teleriand and dreams and predicting the future and the
foretelling
whole kind of
stuff. Yeah,
it's like, wait a minute, or why is Perrin getting the spoiler montage? I thought that was Egwene's thing, but you know, it's what's happening. So we get a couple of them, and we get Egwene, who is standing amongst women who are kneeling before her. Matt is naked and bound with his spear on his back and his fox head medallion on his chest, and Rand is in rags with a bandage covering his eyes. So then, after our spoiler montage, Perrin is kind of released into the Teleriand Riad wolf dream. So he's scouting around looking for signs of Trollocs and does find signs of campfires, searches around, sees that other villages have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Then Slayer attacks him, and Perrin defends himself and manages to, I think he manages to shoot him with an arrow. Oh no, someone else shoots him with an arrow
and hits him in the chest.
Yeah. So Slayer has been wounded. Perrin wakes up, hears a commotion downstairs, and Perrin finds out that Lord Luke just ran away looking injured.
Yep.
So Perrin wonders, is there a connection here?
Maybe.
Yeah.
He starts to realize that Luke and Slayer have the same smell.
Right. Yeah. So this is like another just a hint that maybe these are the same people. Then Perrin and Fael get married. It's just like out of nowhere. Like this was Perrin really just he believed with thousands of Trollocs being in the Westwood that Emmons Field was bound to be overrun, and he didn't want Fael to die. So he's like, you know, you have to leave and go to Camelin. And basically he's like, I need you to go to Camelin to ask for help. But really, he's just trying to get her to leave so she won't die. And she's like, I will do it if you will marry me.
Yep.
And so they get married. It's like, okay, great. That's I guess not so sudden, but kind of sudden. So that's the end of chapter 53. Back to Elaine. Elaine's
into the palace.
Into the palace. So we're getting into kind of the climax territory here. It's not quite, but pretty much pretty close. They're going to the palace with Bale Doman and his street toughs. And they get in and change into servants' clothes to try to, you know, sneak in and go find Amythera, go find the various things that Nynaeve saw in the World of Dreams. So they go in and get into Amythera's room and do find Tamael, you know, just like Nynaeve saw in the World of Dreams. And so they knock her out with flow of air and convince Amythera, hey, we're here to help you. So they get her to cooperate, get her to sneak out with them so that they can get her out of there. So then we switch over to Nynaeve.
Yep. And she is in the museum and she finds the Domination Band. And there's right. something funny here in the fandom wikia that I just think, I don't know if this is a thing, like, you know, some people call the girls the Supergirls, the Wonder Girls, and that's kind of a common thing in the fandom. I hadn't heard of this, but I just think it's funny that they refer to the Domination Bands as the Sad Bracelets.
What the heck?
Yeah.
I don't know why that name is appropriate. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because whenever somebody picks, like, touches them, they get real bummed out because of all the evil they feel from it. So okay. I feel like it's kind of appropriate.
Fair enough. Yeah, I guess that's true. So then Moghedien shows up and they get in a fight. And Moghedien realizes they're kind of evenly matched. And so she tries to bargain, threatens her. But in the end, Nynaeve manages to get the upper hand.
There's kind of a funny moment in the midst of this battle that Nynaeve thinks to herself, if somebody were to walk by in the midst of this fight, they would just see two women staring at each other.
Right. They're just staring at each other in concentration, like from opposite ends of the hall. That's a good point. Probably not a lot of excitement going on because they're just right. like.
And so it would be kind of funny if that was represented by having some, you know, really intense music, really, you know, seeing the flows coming out of them and everything.
And then like switch to somebody else's perspective.
Right, exactly. Right. Somebody walks by in the hallway and just sees two and it's silent. Like,
and they're like brows furrowed in concentration, maybe some sweat running. And they're like,
right.
And so they're just like, what is going on here?
And then they just keep walking, you know, like,
and then it
totally
switches back and then it's like the dramatic music again.
Yeah. Everything is really super dramatic. Yep, right. Exactly.
Yeah. And then of course to emphasize that point, Nynaeve kind of like breaks the deadlock by throwing the sad bracelets at Moghedien, which it kind of like messes her up and then throws a shield on her and wraps her up in air and really could have, like, you know, probably could have killed her or stilled her or something. But it's at this point that one of the other members of the Black Aja, has a Tirangriel that shoots Balefire and starts using it.
Right.
So it kind of brings the palace down around them with this Balefire rod.
Yeah.
And so instead of being able to, like, take Moghedien with her, she loses her concentration and Moghedien escapes. But Nynaeve did win the fight, beat a Forsaken.
Yep.
And so
exactly.
So she gets the stuff too. She gets the seal, gets the
She picks up the sad bracelets and takes the seal. And so it's one of those situations where if you're ever playing a video game and you're like way leveled up past where most people are when you're at a point in a game fight somebody and you just like really easily beat them, but then because of the narrative of the game, it's like, no, they're too powerful, you can't face them now, and it like forces you to run away. That's kind of
like,
the way
I
it
could,
felt
though.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the way it felt with this. It's like Nynaeve's like, come on.
If she hadn't used that Tirangriel to throw Balefire around and bring the palace down, maybe I could have taken her with me.
Exactly.
Yeah. Chapter 55 is sort of after the big fight. She's running through the palace, sees a couple more of the Black Aja, including Leandrin. They don't see her. And so she meets back up with Elaine and Agiana and Nymathera and tells them, I just fought a Forsaken and won. But I couldn't bring her with me, unfortunately. But here's some stuff that I found. So they go outside and there's a riot going on. The White Cloaks and Bael Domund's men and of course the people, they've kind of sowed chaos in the city. Elaine takes Amathera back to Rindra to
and tells her that she's a refugee.
Does not tell her immediately who she is, and just says, you know, keep her in hiding. So Bael Domund recognizes the seal and says he had one, like, you know, because it gets back to he had one that he gave to High Lord Turok. Elaine tries to destroy the Tirangriel, the sad bracelets. I'm not like saying that now, sad bracelets.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work, of course, because why would it? Bael Domund is going to instead throw them in the sea, and the others will take the seal back to Tar Valon. Nynaeve, of course, wants to go find Lan. Makes sense.
And so that kind of wraps up their story.
Right. That was their kind of the climactic moment, you know, got our battle. We have kind of three climaxes here.
One after the other.
Yeah. And they're not, and none of the three are as big as, or as quite as big and epic as other books have been, but like all three together, it makes for a pretty exciting couple of chapters.
Right. Yeah.
Of course, the next is Perrin's big fight with the Trollocs. He has sent Faeyil away, you know, ostensibly to Camelin to ask for help. Of course, we know that's not what she actually did, but he's in the Winespring Inn writing a letter to Faeyil. Ban Alcine comes in and says, okay, the Trollocs are on their way. He just sort of feels like the enemy is at the gate, goes to the center of the village and sees that the White Cloaks are there preparing to leave. And he says, listen, if you stay and help, I will kind of turn myself in. Just help us fight off these Trollocs. So Dane Bornhall is like, yes, we will. I will bring justice after this fight, even though all the people are like, don't do that. We don't need them. We can do this without them. So then we get this little moment before the fight where Perrin is talking to Varen, and she's like, yeah, you're just as interesting as the other Tavirin in your own way.
That's when she says, when are you going to give up the hammer?
Ah, right.
I mean, give this up. Referring to the axe, she says, when are you going to give this up for the hammer?
The Trolloc's attack. Not really a sudden Trolloc attack because we kind of saw it coming.
Right. Yeah, it's actually kind of the first one.
Yeah, the first one, it's like not a surprise.
Yeah, not at all a surprise. Like we're sitting in wait for it.
Right.
And this is really, and I referred to this in like last episode or maybe even before that, but this really is to me reminiscent of the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Oh yeah, totally. Especially because, you know, yeah, because we have the folks that ride in to save the day.
Right.
Yeah.
You have the small force, you have the, you know, evil army that's really basically trying to commit genocide.
Right.
And completely wipe them out, and they seemingly don't have much of a chance, but they manage to mount an offensive. Right. It's also right here that the Trollocs shout out Isom.
Right.
Before they attack.
What is the significance of that? I can't remember.
So Varen says, interesting. Now, I'm going to say something that I'll call it a spoiler for people that it doesn't spoil anything. I'll just tell you, it doesn't spoil a thing because you won't know enough. And there's really no point at which this is made clear. You really have to kind of dig into either the world of the Wheel of Time, you know, kind of encyclopedia thing or whatever. But Isom is the first name of a cousin of Lan Mandragoran.
Okay. Now this is making sense now.
Yeah. So with that little bit of information, it gives you a little more clarity as to why maybe there's someone running around in the wolf dream that looks a little bit like Lan.
Right. Yeah, indeed. So the Trollocs overrun village defenses. Aram actually saves Perrin at one point. Trolloc grabs him. But then Boy comes up and says that there's reinforcements on the way. The Devon Ride has come to help. It's Perrin sees the Menetherin banner. So then Watch Hill, the folks from Watch Hill have come also, led by Faeyil.
Yep.
So she has, of course, not actually gone to Camelin. She went and got help at Watch Hill. And so they stop the Trollocs, but then the White Cloaks come up and say, like, ask him to turn himself in. But he refuses because they didn't actually help. They didn't actually do anything. They just sat there and watched the fight. Dane Bornhall says, you will see Perrin dead, even if the world burns. But they decide to leave because the villagers and everyone's like, you better freaking leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So we get a little bit of Pot and Fane at the end of it.
Right.
He's watching from a tree and says, Zordith doesn't understand how this all went wrong. This is when he says, why did he stop bringing in more Trollocs?
Right. So this is how we find out basically who was leading the Trollocs into the Two Rivers. You know, it's like indirectly, at least.
Yeah.
So
he really wanted the entire Two Rivers totally destroyed in order to get Rand's attention, because he's thinking, OK, if I can just raise Rand's home, then
that'll do it. Yeah, he'll come back.
He'll come back to me and I don't have to chase after him.
Right.
That way, you know, I can destroy him and totally derail this.
And that plan foiled. He takes his fade and his loyalists and heads on to Tar Valon, Camelin.
I'm gonna take my fade and go home.
Right, my pet fade. Yeah.
Come on, Ted.
Ted the Myrdral. You can join Narg. So then we go back and we have to catch up with Rand and get his requisite boss fight. Right. Although this one again is a lesser fight compared to other ones. So they arrive at Al Cair Dall. This is first happens.
Right.
Yeah. So this is
So you have a whole lot of stuff that happens at Al Cair Dall, because First of all, there's this whole thing that is kind of interesting how you can stand at this one point.
And you can like talk normally and people can hear you throughout the Golden Bowl, right?
Right. Yep. The Golden Bowl. Yeah. And so Culloden, he doesn't want Rand to even enter Al-Khair Dal. And so we know like Culloden might have a plan here at that point. Right. And Moraine wants to accompany Rand, but Amys tells her it's men's business.
So then that's pretty much when Culloden kind of makes his play, says he's the Karakarn, reveals he also has dragon marks on his arm, you know, just shows them off. And the Rand's like, oh, crud, I have those. And so, but then Rand has this kind of stroke of brilliance where he says, okay, Culloden, if you've been to Roydeon, tell us what you saw. Clan chiefs and wise women are like, and Rand knows exactly what he's doing. And Rand was basically planning to do this all along. Culloden just sort of kind of forced the issue and caused it to come out sooner. Rand's like, I saw the Aiel when they followed the way of the leaf and throughout the Age of Legends. And of course, this causes lots of consternation. And Culloden's like, no, you're lying. This is, I saw great glory of the Aiel. And the clan chiefs are all kind of quietly looking at each other like, okay, so yeah, clearly Rand, we don't like that he's telling our people this, but clearly Rand is the Karakarn. So they all kind of acknowledge that. Culloden throws a tantrum and then throws a spear. So then they kind of start fighting a little bit, but Rand calls down a rainstorm and to kind of stop the fighting.
When Lanfear appears.
And she's upset with him. Yeah.
Yes. She is angry and said, Asmodean is behind the dragons on Culloden's arms, as well as the attack of the drag car, but now Rand has scared him away.
Right. So she's like, I think she says something like, Asmodean has found something that he likes better than this plan. So he's gone to Roydeon. And so Rand opens a gateway and steps through to chase.
It's not quite a gateway. He's skimming.
Right. Which is, it's a weird concept. It's almost like he's in Teleron Riad because he's like running upstairs. I don't think he is. Maybe he is. I don't really know. That's not super clear to me.
It's never totally explained clearly what it is, other than it's if you fall off of the skimming platform, you're gonna die.
Yeah. It's like you're falling forever and you're just going to die. Yeah. Starvation or whatever.
Until you fall out of the hole that Doctor Strange made Loki fall into. Right. I've been falling for 20 minutes.
Exactly. So Rand chases Asmodean to Roydeon, which of course makes sense as it's a good place for a boss battle. So they go back to the center of the city where all the Tyrion Griella were, and it's pretty clear that Asmodean is looking for something, and so he's like running away. He's like throwing walls of fire at Rand, like as he's running away from him. They start fighting. It's interesting. Several times, you know, it's been said that Rand is like doesn't know what he's doing with the One Power. Like, well, man, he's already killed a couple Forsaken, and he's, you know, he's like he's doing okay.
You figured out skimming.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, clearly Luce Tlirin being in his head has taught him something already. He obviously doesn't know that much. And it becomes clear that what Asmodean is after is the key to the Chosen Call. So that's what he's trying to get. And so they both grab onto it at the same time, and they're like fighting for, you know, like trying to kill each other with massive amounts of the power, but they both have like half of it.
Right.
But the difference is Rand has the fat man Angriel in his pocket,
just a little bit more.
Yeah. So which he uses that to sever Asmodean from the Dark One.
The Dark One.
Yeah, like the wires, the dark wires that connect him to the Dark One. We, of course, saw the same dark wires attached to Ishmael. And
I'll just say, I really do think that he hadn't settled on calling it the true power yet.
And I don't think Asmodean was channeling the true power.
Yeah.
I think I remember reading that only the Nablis could channel the true power, because they would get like the black dots in his eyes or whatever. It's like, I think that this is Asmodean's connection to the Dark One, and it prevents him from going crazy, going insane. It protects him from the taint, but it doesn't actually let him channel the true power. Sure. I think I could be wrong about that, but I think
that makes sense too. Point is, Rand cuts him off,
right? And so then suddenly he's just like anybody else, channeling one power, just like any other man. He's exposed to the taint, and Asmodean is in agony for this happening. Lanfear shows up, doesn't even know that could happen, that he could be cut off like that. So this is when Rand reveals his plan that, yeah, he will keep him alive and get him to teach him to use the power. And for a moment, he thinks that Lanfear is going to kill him, but she just basically is like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I still want you alive. There was this interesting moment where Asmodean refers to her as Mieren. And that I totally missed this in every other read through.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And
it's crazy.
Yeah. I missed it too until this one, that partially because this was the first time that I fully understood the chapters.
Exactly.
That were going back and back and back.
Right. And the explanation
that. And so it's not a spoiler because.
No, this is when it's revealed.
This is when it's revealed.
Right.
But if you didn't catch it, that this is revealing that Lanfear was actually the one who created the boar.
She, in the Age of Legends, she is the one who, on purpose or not, bored into the Dark One's prison and sort of ended the Age of Legends or started the war with the Dark One that led to the end of the Age of Legends. Exactly. She was the Aes Sedai in the Age of Legends who did that. And that the moment where the giant orb kind of crashes down into the earth. That was her orb, I guess. Yep. Which is, that's just like it paints that this character in such a different light. It really does make you wonder, was she intentionally trying to do this, or did she accidentally bore into the Dark One's prison and in so doing touch the Dark One and realize that this is this huge source of power, and it just kind of was corrupted then. Like, you could see either way.
The picture that we have of the Age of Legends is a utopia where people couldn't even conceive of evil, more or less. And so I do think that her intentions were
pure before
she actually... Relatively pure. I think they may have been somewhat...
Ambitious, maybe.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that might have been kind of a little bit of a Tower of Babel kind of thing. Trying to reach up for something other than the one power, or that really is the source of life and what sustains time and everything. Well, if I've discovered something greater than that, then
exactly.
Not even questioning whether or not that should be tampered with. Like, hey, if there's something out there that might mess with the wheel of time turning, then maybe not just drill right on into it. I don't know. That's me, though. Yeah, I'm just cautious, I guess.
Right. So, but that is how Mieren became Lanfear and became maybe the first chosen, I would think, I think all the chosen are from the Age of Legends, a powerful Aes Sedai. So she probably was the first one.
Yeah, makes sense.
She leaves and a lake is forming in the waste. So now that the city is no longer covered by fog.
Right.
And so, like, I guess the water that was underneath Roydeon has come up. Rand has decided he won't kill Asmodean. He'll keep him around, keep calling him Jason the Tail, the Gleeman, and that Asmodean will teach Rand how to use the One Power so that he can actually fight the other Forsaken and win.
And back at Al-Khair Dal, Rand returns. Moraine notices the two statues.
Right. Yeah. She notices it and doesn't say anything about it. So that's brings us to the end.
We learn that the Shido have left entirely. A few of the other Aiel have also abandoned them. It's kind of like some of them went with the Shido. Some of them are just like
we find out in the next book they become called the Brotherless.
Right.
They just can't handle the concept that they used to follow the way of the leaf as a people. Right.
Just kind of blows their mind.
Right. And so I always like the ending quotes we get. So this is from The Wheel of Time by Suleiman Sobhagad, chief historian at the Court of the Sun, the Fourth Age. And when the blood was sprinkled on ground where nothing could grow, the children of the ground dragon did spring up. people of the dragon armed to dance with death. And he did call them forth from the wasted lands, and they did shake the world with battle. That's the, the quote we get at the end of the fourth book of the Wheel of Time.
Okay, so were there any spoilery things kind of that we hadn't been able to talk about up to this point that you wanted to kind of get into?
One thing I didn't miss, this isn't spoilery, but I'm going to mention it anyways, that at one point when the Aiel are accompanying Rand as a show of strength to Alcaer Dal, the Tardod, they're singing, "Wash the spears."
Oh, yeah.
"Wash the spears while the sun climbs high. Wash the spears while the sun falls low." And it's like this song they sing going to battle.
Right.
And I guess it makes sense since like water is so sacred to them that washing the spears would be a big deal.
Yeah. Who fears death? No man I know.
All right. Exactly. Till shade is gone, till water turns dry. How long from home until I die?
So, I wondered if wash the spears referred to getting blood on your spear.
That makes more sense. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it makes more sense because I like your interpretation too.
Yeah, either way. Yeah. It's both are good. Yeah.
The idea that, I mean, because, you don't want to ride into battle with dirty weaponry.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so taking a moment to wash a spear when water is precious means that you're really serious about
you
what
really
you're doing.
Care about your weapons. And this is important, right? For sure. Yeah. No.
So let's talk for a second about Slayer.
Oh, yeah. 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 Good
because
call.
We may kind of get into some spoilery territory here, so I'm just going to go ahead and say if you want to join us next week, feel free to wait until then. We'll be starting up on the Fires of Heaven, so we'll see you later. But a lot of this stuff, I mean, what happens in this book, it's just kind of confusing.
It is, you definitely don't have enough context, when they're shouting Isim to know. Okay, Isim is Slayer, and then Lord Luke, like these are all the same person. We definitely, that's not clear. And also who Isim is, I don't even know when that's actually really fully explained. I'm not even sure, but I looked it up in the wiki, but I have no idea.
Yeah, it does get explained, but it's not an aha kind of moment. It's kind of, It feels anyway, at least to me, it felt like, and here's this bit of information that won't be helpful at all.
Yeah, you could almost see an argument for either having just a little perspective here or something, because I want to know this dude's story. The fact that he's from Malkier, cousin of Lan. How did you, being a dark friend and all this stuff, how did you get to what is the sequence of events that brought you to the Two Rivers? It definitely would be interesting to get that. And I don't know that we ever fully do.
Yeah. The other thing is, I don't even know where this comes up. I wouldn't know this if it weren't for the wiki. But Luke, it's downright confusing to me that Luke and Slayer are the same person, because Luke is a different person than Slayer. Luke Mantir, it says here, was the first prince of Andor and brother to Tigraine, making him the blood uncle of Randall Thor.
So they say the merger of two souls. What does that even mean?
And it's made about as clear as mud later when Slayer says something about how at that time Luke was in charge, and basically Luke's never going to be in charge, that he was the more submissive, more agreeable of the two. And so essentially Slayer saying from now on, it's going to be Isom that's going to be in charge of Slayer.
Right. In which Isom, it seems like his visage, his image is what is portrayed in the world of dreams, perhaps.
Exactly.
As opposed to Luke Mantiar's is what he looks like in the real world, maybe.
Right. None of that is made too terribly clear in the books. You really have to, I think, dig into kind of glossary and stuff like that to an encyclopedia world of Wheel of Time. And before that becomes clear, Slayer is one of those things I've seen people argue for cutting.
And I wouldn't have that big of a problem with that, honestly. I think this whole story in Emmons Field could be simplified a little and it wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah. That's true. I would miss it, not because I think it's good. This is one of those things that I think could be improved from the book.
If they were going to simplify it, just let Ordeath bring the Trollocs through the ways. Right. That seems like the most obvious choice to just let that happen.
Right.
Because that's the main purpose he serves here.
The issue later becomes in the last trilogy, you get more of a boss battle for Perrin
with Slayer.
Yeah, it's true. Which honestly, that drags on to me a little bit in that
I agree.
Section, which I love the last trilogy, but that's the one thing that he goes in and fights him and comes back out and goes in and fights him and comes back out and goes back in and finally defeats him.
Right.
And it just feels like here's something for Perrin to do.
Yeah, exactly. Just drag it out a little bit. While all the other stuff is going on.
It is one that I could see getting cut out. I hope it doesn't get cut out.
Yeah, but I would prefer not to. But if they don't, then I think it would very much benefit from a little more info up front.
As always, I always want to remind you that we love to hear from you. So log on to tsmpodcast.com, fill out that contact form, or email us, either of us, Will or Sam, at tsmpodcast.com. That'll end up getting into our inboxes and we can reply, say nice things about us, and we'll give you a shout out. And the same goes for if you want to jump on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. That's Podcast TSM on all of our social media. We post some funny memes and different thoughts, and I occasionally will get into conversations with folks on the Twitter of Time. Matrim Cawthon's hat, as I think I mentioned last time, was one I tried to get into a conversation with. Check us out on there. Give us a like, give us a follow. Wherever you listen to our podcast, give us a review, give us a thumbs up, share us with your friends. We're enjoying doing this podcast and have really enjoyed hearing from the handful of folks that we have and seeing that got folks from our audience all over the world that are regularly listening. It's really cool to see this fandom get excited for the series.
Definitely.
We will trek into book 5 next week. So join us for them. And until then, Sam, why don't you say it?
Tysharm and Etherin.